At Kroger Pharmacy, care is what's most convenient for you. Care is being here when you need us. We're open evenings and weekends. Care is helping you save more. Most insurance plans and discount cards are accepted at your local Kroger Pharmacy. Care is saving you time by managing your prescriptions online. You can request refills, check order status, and more. Care is convenience that works for everyone. Kroger Health, a world of care is in store. Services and availability vary by location. Age and other restrictions may apply. For coverage, consult your health insurance company. Visit the pharmacy or our site for details.
Hi, folks. Welcome to another episode of Film Study. This is Ken McCusick, and we're back for part two of the discussion of the defense in that game against the Steelers. Unbelievably optimistic part one, discussing this with Sam Njoku. Sam, how you doing?
Feeling good. Like, I was telling you, this Ravens defense turned the corner, even though it resulted in a loss. A lot of good things that I saw in that game.
Yeah, no doubt. We talked a little bit about how this hurt the Ravens' playoff hopes. That's not good. And from that, the silver lining from this really is pretty deep in there, but just the way the secondary played, the additional safety play, the additional hope the Ravens showed at corner with some of the play of Trey White, with Humphrey moving to the slot for all the nickel snaps, with Nate Wiggins getting a greatly expanded role because of that movement of Humphrey. A lot of positive to be drawn from that secondary play, because it really does seem to match up with just how well the Ravens defended in the past this game. And we're going to talk about that a little bit in the second part here. But Sam, really appreciate having you back here. Great discussion. Really appreciate all your knowledge of past defense and coverage and whatnot that you brought to this in the first episode. But let's talk about the pass rush for a little bit, starting out this second time. I thought, first of all, good day in terms of the high-level stats that everybody's seen already, the sack totals and whatnot. So they got four sacks in the first half. I mentioned that they got all four of those, finishing with the Broderick Washington sack, which was two plays before Travis Jones' injury. Travis Jones got hurt. The Ravens' pass rush was not really the same the rest of the game.
Yeah, and I knew as soon as he got hurt, I was like, man, this is going to be very troubling, because you saw earlier in the season, Travis Jones, when he got hurt the first time, how this pass rush really was affected. And you start to see him get healthy in that Bengals game, you think, okay, great. That this is going to work well. Madubuike is going to have another dog in his arsenal to help him get to the quarterback. And when he got hurt, I said, oh boy, what are they going to do? Especially with the lack of guys dressing up in the interior line. You were thinking the worst, and you saw the fade, as you mentioned, in the pass rush for the Ravens. So you hope that Jones is okay moving forward, but you could definitely tell with his injury what impact he has on that football team.
Yeah, it's just he drives the entire thing. So he wasn't out for all of the three games, but he played the first six, and he got hurt early in the Tampa game, in the first half anyway. And then they had him on the field for like two plays in the fourth quarter. So he did try and stay on the field, but the entire interior defensive line did not have a single pressure in that game after he left. And the Ravens ATS rate allowed for the Tampa game and the two that followed was 50%, ample time and space. Now, I define that as a 3-second pocket. It's a statistic of my own calculation and collection. This game, it was only 20%. And the last game where Jones was back, it was 29%, which is very average. 20% is good, you know, in terms of this. So they did a very good job. Some of that was some Bengals weak offensive line play, and probably some of it was some Steelers weak offensive line play in this game as well. I thought that in particular, Broderick Jones didn't look particularly good on the right side.
Yeah. And you're spot on with that. And I know the Ravens have played some poor offensive line, so I'm not going to lay too much into that, but the fact that they were able to come in and double their performance in Cincinnati, I was very concerned initially that, you know, there's a chance that the pass rush success and Cincinnati wouldn't carry over. That wasn't the case. Mm-hmm. Obviously, with Jones being hurt, that does put a damper on some things. But for the most part, I think this pass rush is finding their groove. And I think a very interesting thing, I'm pretty sure we'll talk about it, is the fact that they didn't address David Ajabo. They brought in Adisa Isaac instead. How much he played a part in the success isn't that much, but it's starting to look like the Ravens are still trying to tweak things. And that's been the theme with this defense for the Steelers game. They're trying to tweak things and find ways to improve. They're not just standing pat and hoping that things get worked out. They're making effective decisions that are starting to pay dividends as the season draws to a close, which is huge considering that the Ravens are still in the thick of it in terms of what they're planning to do in the playoffs.
Yeah, I definitely agree with you on the Ajabo Isaac decision. I think we will get to that a little later and make sure we answer that. I think we got to have a question about it too, which is good. So in terms of ample time and space, 8 plays, they dropped back 40 times that resulted in either a pass or a sack. So, and that was all Wilson. Fields didn't throw the ball. So eight plays, 20%, 49 yards, 6.1 yards per play, included one sack. Now, my standard for that is about 8.5 yards per attempt. And that's based on some past Ravens numbers. It might need to be updated. That might not be enough to expect. But at 8.5 yards, he still fell 19 yards short of standard, which that's what you want. You want to hold your opposing quarterback short of standard.
Yeah.
What I'd say is good about that is the ATS number is low, which is a good thing for the line. The 6.1 yards per play, which includes the sack, is good for all components of the pass defense, but especially the secondary, that they're showing up, holding up their end of the bargain on a good low ATS amount. And so Burrow had a, I think 29% ATS, but he also had something like 15 yards per throw on ATS, which was, that's a problem. So then the secondary is not entirely holding it up. The ball out quick is the second, 40% ball out quick. His numbers worked out great this week. 16 plays out of 40, exactly 40%, 75 yards, 4.7 yards per play. You should be at around 6.0 on ball out quick throws. So he was approximately 21 yards below standard there. With pressure, 16 plays, 40%, 57 net yards, 3.6 yards per play is right on the money. He's 1 yard above expectation. So 39 yards below expectation overall, 220 expected, and only 181 actual, which is a very nice, that's a very nice place to be. But I will say one more thing about this is the relationship between pressure and ATS. I typically like to see it about 1.5 to 1 for the defense. It's 2 to 1 this game. That's outstanding. That's you're forcing the opposing quarterback to make a lot of ball out quick throws, and just it's a very nice place to be.
I love your statistics when it comes to that, because I usually look at ATS. I usually look at how many yards they are from the quarterback prior to the ball being thrown and all of that. But that is a nice additional stat that I might need to implement when I'm looking at film study on these games, because you're right. The defense played phenomenally. They complemented each other very well. The ball, if the ball was getting out, the defenders were right there to stop the receivers. And that's what you want to see, something you didn't see in the past. And I'm wondering if this pass rush, especially, and I thought that with the increase of pass rush, I think this was a thing for a lot of Ravens fans early in the season, that the better the pass rush, the better the secondary play. Wasn't necessarily the case against the Bengals. Definitely was the case in this game. They complemented each other very well. I'm wondering how opposing offenses moving forward handle that, knowing that the Ravens do have some secondary help and the pass rush is able to get there. Maybe they're doing more to extend these plays, more bootlegs to give their quarterbacks time to make those throws. But very nice to see what the Ravens are able to do on defense, and this pass rush should improve and needs to improve, get better. But it's a good starting point. I like where they're at. Travis Jones, again, I mentioned it. How healthy is he going to be moving forward? Will his injury hamper his performance? Because we've seen that his injury has coincided with his performance. They keep him out there sometimes, and maybe he shouldn't be, or maybe he's not 100% and they need him at 100%, because when he is at 100%, he's one of the best interior pass rushers in the league. And that's something that a lot of Ravens fans aren't really taking into consideration as this team move forward, but we'll see what happens. I like the pass rush. I like it a lot.
Commands double team, to be sure. One thing we usually talk about on a week-to-week basis is how Orr uses numbers in the game. Pretty much just a poor man pass rush in this game. 6 times only he rushed 5+. He sprinkled in some very minimal deception, which I'll talk about a little bit. But the 6 times they rushed 4+ were 4.0 yards per play. And so it wasn't that much more when they had a 4-man pass rush. Your 4-man pass rush, of course, gives you 7 to drop the coverage. It's a much more comfortable feeling, probably for the couple of safeties back there to, you know, you hope you could depend on these guys to just be, you know, they're in the early stages of playing those exact positions at the NFL level. You still hope that you can depend on them, but it's still having either 3 or 4, you know, high level cornerbacks up there up front really helped. And it's just the opposite of the 2023 Ravens. The 2023 Ravens had really questionable corners. And they had great safeties on top that were making up for their play. Geno Stone had a monstrous year as a ball hawk. Williams was a good player despite some tackling difficulties he had during the year. That's all reversed this year. Geno's gone, of course, and Eddie Jackson hasn't filled his shoes. I don't know what would be smaller that he hasn't even filled would be the way the joke to make, but he's a having Washington and Hamilton back there now, it should be something we depend on. I still feel like the corners that they have now are probably going to make it easier for those two.
Yeah, and that's a great point that you made. Considering the 2023 team, the Ravens are way better at corner than they were last year talent wise. They should feel a lot more comfortable. Of course, the pass defense hasn't been where it needs to be, and we've talked about how that is directly correlated with the play of the safeties. So moving forward, I think the Ravens may decide to be more comfortable blitzing more. I don't know if I'm comfortable with that as a fan, considering how well they played with the four-man rush, but it stands to reason that with the play of White and Wiggins and what they choose to do with them moving forward, that they can be a little more exotic with the amount of pressure they send with a fifth or sixth blitzer. But we'll see. I think that's one of the things they'll need to work on as this team goes forward. The Ravens love to build upon decision making and their performances and things of that nature. And maybe later on we'll talk about my thoughts on what they decided to do in the offseason post McDonald. But I think that the Ravens DBs are primed for success. A lot of that we'll have to deal with not having Kyle in the line of scrimmage, which sucks because I love watching him do damage there. But yeah, I think that the secondary is way better this year than last year talent wise. So we'll see how that translates.
All right. If you want to see other detail on the pass rush and how it went out by numbers, take a look at the article, please. That all that detail is out there. I do want to talk about some of the elements of deception used. Or called five off ball blitzes in this game. Now that's when somebody is at least as far out as the slot corner and blitzes. If he declares himself early, if he gives himself early, he's no longer in that group. Or is an off-ball player at least 1.5 yards off the ball. So that's oftentimes a linebacker, sometimes a safety rushing in and blitzing. Only five of those the whole game. 0.13 per play is exceedingly low. And here's the funny thing. All these elements of deception really worked out well for the Ravens. So they used them only a little bit, but they were very successful when they did. 2.8 yards per play, 5 yards, 14 plays, one sack in there. They had two stunts during the game. They were both singles. This is a team that normally stunts a lot. And when you're not doing anything, when you're not doing anything else, usually your players can call stunts on field and will do so in order to get advantages on things they see on the field. They don't even have to ask the coach. They get empowered to do it. But in a game like this with Wilson, I think they were actually trying to contain the pocket, even though I don't really think of Russell Wilson as being a running quarterback. I think that was a reason why they might have said no to it.
Maybe they were deciding maybe we're going to go ahead and keep him in the pocket because we want to force him to make a mistake with the football. Okay. Maybe they didn't trust him. That was my thought process with it. But to your point, I don't think that's would have been my thought because, again, I don't think he's that great of a runner anymore. I don't think that's part of his skill set, especially given the makings of that offense. So very surprising. I'm sure 2023, the Ravens did a lot more off-ball splits, and I think I saw it ad nauseum last year and in a good way with McDonald. So I think very interesting their thought process. I think the word of the day was simplification. That's kind of the thought process I had with Zach Orr. They want to simplify things. They thought they were getting too exotic. At least that's the message that I was hearing from them earlier in the season. Whether or not they'll build upon that with the success they had today and the comfortability with Kyle Hamilton back there remains to be seen. But very interesting that they only chose to blitz that number of times. And the stunts, to your point, they do choose to do that off screen. I mean, prior to the snap on their own. So I wonder what their thought process with that later in the game when they weren't having as much success rushing the passer with Travis Jones.
Well, when you see like 12 stunts in a typical game, maybe, and that might be a normal kind of number that they would use. Maybe that's even a little high. Maybe it's 10 stunts would be normal. But when I see two, and Orr has said something to the defenders and said, hey, look, we can't go off script and do stunts here. We need to get after Wilson, get in his face. It could also be a quick pressure thing because stunts often take a little longer to develop. Another thing that stunts do are they create passing lanes for the quarterback. And Wilson being a shorter guy, they might have wanted to make sure that as much of the horizontal space along the line of scrimmage had potential arms in the way to either block the ball or just to block his vision, because he has a hard time looking over, really seeing the field at his height.
Yeah, that's a good point. I didn't even think about that. It does create passing lanes, and maybe they thought that was part of the problem. But I all kudos to Orr, because I thought he did a masterful job in this game. So whatever his thought process was definitely accurate, because they were able to get after him at least early on, and the pass defense of this team excelled considerably. So I wonder what they'll do in the Los Angeles Chargers game. Of course, that's a conversation for another day, but I see the vision of Orr in this one.
Yeah. I think lots of things to like here. Two more things. Simulated pressure. Now, they've done a lot of simulated pressure versus certain quarterbacks and certain offensive lines when they're trying to confuse the line on blocking assignments and confuse the quarterback sometimes on hot reads. It does put your linebackers, who are typically the ones dropping into coverage, at a disadvantage. It could be your inside or your outside guys, either ones. When they have to drop the coverage, most outside linebackers are not Tyus Bowser, exceptionally good at dropping, have good speed and be able to get to things. And most inside linebackers have the same sort of troubles that we've seen from Roquan Smith at times this year, where he seems like he's wedged up in there and it takes him forever to get to the outside to cover a running back that he's supposed to be on. So only one play, it happened to be Washington's sack for minus 10, that was a simulated pressure. That one also had something else associated with it. It also had a blitz by Roquan Smith on that play. So that meant it also was a 2+ elements play, one of the deceptive pass rushers. So that was the only one of those for minus 10 yards also. So some overlap in these successes, but that one play, obviously, which brought together multiple elements, also a positive one.
Yeah, and I'm a fan of simulated pressure, you know, just listening. I mean, watching Mike McDonald's defense last year, you know, that was his bread and butter. But, you know, to your point, Roquan has struggled in those situations where they ask him to pull back post-snap and bring in a guy from the outside. So I think the Ravens saw that in film, him struggling to get to that running back, maybe get to that slot corner. I saw a couple of those plays in the red zone against the Bengals a few times where they did ask that of Roquan. So very nice to see the blitz of Roquan, because I think he's an underrated pass rusher. I think at times he has that ability to get there, probably in deceptive moments, but still, I think that he does play a part in their success. So I'm sure you'll see more in new games. I think maybe even Herbert, I'm sure we'll see more stimulated pressure, because that does play a huge part in confusing him, the QB. But all in all, I can't complain, but one simulated pressure is kind of nuts considering where they were this time last year.
Yeah, the Bengals in the first game used 15 simulated pressures against the Ravens. In the second game, they used zero. So it's sometimes you're just tinkering, you're trying to find the right formula, but that was pretty weird, honestly. And to your point about Roquan, I think he's kind of in an unfortunate position that CJ Mosley was in his last year with the Ravens, that he's the best coverage guy they have at inside linebacker. So they're trying to put him into that space because they know a Trenton Simpson can rush the quarterback from that weak side spot, and that will be create less of a negative space for him. It's kind of like the Kyle Hamilton moving to free safety spot. Is it's not necessarily the best place for Roquan. You might rather use him as a pass rusher, or he might be better as a pass rusher than he is as a coverage player. But you have to have someone from the inside linebacker group be a coverage player on most schemes, and so they have to rely on him. And so it's unfortunate, but CJ Mosley, I think, really was hurt by some of the stupidity among Ravens fans talking about what a bad coverage player he was, when he's really forced into that situation by what the Ravens did.
Yeah, I think Roquan, I think, is still a good coverage linebacker. I mean, don't make any mistake about that. But they are asking a lot of him, and yeah, fans are going to be fans. Some of them aren't watching film. They're results based, and you know that's fine. But to your point, yeah, CJ Mosley was another guy who definitely was in that position where he had to do more, and sometimes it worked for the betterment of the team. And I think this is a situation where if Roquan is in a little bit better position from the coaching staff, he could do more damage as a coverage linebacker. I still think that he's a phenomenal linebacker. I think he's one of the best in the league. People may say he might be a task lord, and there may be some truth to that. But for the most part, you can't ask for a better linebacker. And I think when he got injured, you kind of saw a little bit of this defense take a hit, especially in the run defense aspect. So fans, be careful what you ask for and what you're wishing for in regards to your players, because they're doing more than you think. And it's for the betterment of the team in certain situations.
Yeah, the notion that Roquan should be taken off the field somehow is just ridiculous. I mean, you can't consider that. And he's the green dot. He's critically important for calling the plays. Looked like Kyle Hamilton had the green dot late in the game. I may be wrong about that. It may have been Harrison, but I think that Hamilton might have been the guy, because Harrison actually was off the field on a couple of plays. So it wouldn't have completely made sense for anybody but Hamilton to be the guy.
Right. I think it was Hamilton.
All right, let's move on. Let's talk about individual players. And Sam, you're the guest. I know, maybe don't know the format, but you bring up the first player and I'll talk about what you want to talk about them. I'll respond to that. And then I get the second.
All right. I'll start things off. I am loving Odafe Owe. I think he's a guy who, you know, slowly getting acclimated. I talk about this on my show all the time. Got to give these guys time to develop. I think there's a skill set that they come out of college with, and we know what his skill set was, but, you know, transitioning from college to the NFL is very tough. So when I see flashes of brilliance from players, I get excited. And it seems like for a second straight week, he's starting to put things together. So I'm very excited for what Odafe Owe has done. I'm sure the Ravens are ecstatic with his performance in this game. And if he can continue to build on this performance, this Ravens defense is going to improve way more than many expect, because he was going after it, especially early on, with the addition of Travis Jones and Matty BK both at near 100%. So I'm very excited with his work, and I'm assuming that this continues, but it remains to be seen.
So great game from Owe, by the way. And last week he had four actual quarterback hits, and there were two others. Might have been one negated by penalty, by like a roughing the passer on somebody else. He lost a quarterback hit. And then one other was negated by for some other reason. Like it got, I forget what the reason was, but there, he essentially had six quarterback hits in that game last week. In the game here, he turned it up a notch and got the sacks. Everybody wants to see Odafe get sacks. He had 2.5 sacks in the game. So for one of them came on the slide. The half sack was a slide by Wilson where they granted it equally to the two closest players, who were Odafe and Brandon Stevens on the play. But he also had a very fast sack where he beat Jones outside on 3rd and 4. And he had another S-10. I'm sorry, I don't have that correct. I'm looking at my sheet here for the other sack he had. He had a sack minus 10 that was negated by review, by the way. And that was the play where Pickens was on the right sideline. He stepped on the sideline, was ruled out of bounds. They started, but they ruled it as a completed pass. He came in, sacked the quarterback, and then they stopped the play and they said, wait a minute, we had to review it, and we blew the whistle just before the play occurred. But yeah, both teams were playing that play at full speed, and Odafe got a sack. That was a nice effort.
I think that he is primed to excel in this defense. I was very high on him coming out of college, but yeah, I think to your point, especially that play that I got called back, he is on full go. I don't know what happened between that Bengals game, prior to that Bengals game, and now, but he is on full tilt. I don't know if I don't see any changes on film that jump out at me, but maybe he's just starting to put it together, or maybe something on film that he's noticing about his game that he's corrected. He is looking very good, and I'm hoping, and I'm sure Ravens fans are hoping, this continues for the majority of the season.
He's remarkably, he's had always a pretty good toolkit of moves that I think is improved with having Chuck Smith here. I mean, I you know, he's been in the league 4 years now. He's always had a pretty good spin move. And he's always had a pretty good dip move to the outside, and he's very strong. So he's a good dip and rip guy, where some edge defenders, it's just not the perfect move for them. They end up getting slowed down. David Ajabo kind of falls into that category, unfortunately. But you know, honestly, with Odafe, he's got a good dip. I wouldn't call it bend in the traditional sense, but it's a very good under the shoulder, force the left tackle to do something stupid move. And I really like it. But the problem has always been, he's so slow out of a stance that he has been, you know, that hasn't been something that has dramatically improved over his career. It really needs to be something. If there is a way to get training on that. And I've been thinking about this in terms of driver's ed and a machine we used to work on that you know, you basically would have your foot on the gas and then you see a red light and you'd have to judge how quickly did you have to stop the car by putting your foot on the brake, and the thing would time you and it'd be like, you know, 0.32 seconds or something. This was in 1979, I learned to drive. So it's I'm sure things have improved since then. There are machines, and there are certainly machines available to athletes to judge how quickly are they managing that information to get out of their stance and get off quickly. And there probably are even specialists to teach it to edge players, defensive linemen, in terms of how to watch the center, how to watch what his ticks and his cadence are to see if you can maybe anticipate it sometimes, but most of the time work off first movement of that ball. I would think there has to be some off-season time that would be really worthwhile to spend on that. That he could make himself a much more valuable player in the National Football League.
Yeah, I know he had some off-season training with a few other guys, and even some guys outside the Ravens roster to improve. And I think it was with Madubuike as well, actually, that he had that training. And mm-hmm. It's starting to see that matriculate and inform out here. But you're right. I think another off-season with the pass rushing specialist, and they do this all the time. They get guys to come in and help them out, but I think, to your point, a guy that comes in and kind of helps him increase his time off the ball and off the snap and, you know, getting to the quarterback will pay huge dividends. But his skill set, as you mentioned, is top tier, and he's well at both. So I'm very high on this guy. But to your point, you know, he's a little slow off the ball, off the snap, I should say, and we'll see if that improves. But skill set is there, and I'm liking it. I'm liking it, especially with this performance. I'm feeling very confident with them moving forward, especially because the Ravens were unable to acquire a pass rusher pre-trade deadline.
So you got a number of players coming up this offseason who are in their early spot to sign them. And always one of them, because he was already signed for the fifth-year option, but Travis Jones, likely, or Ardarius Washington. You could go down to Daniel Fa'alele if you want the entire range of options in terms of, you know, expensive to cheap. Tyler Linderbaum is a big one this offseason. Who do you try and sign out of this group, or how do you approach trying to sign these guys?
You got to get Travis Jones back. I know it's a luxury maybe at this point because you have Madubuike, but I think that he'll do well in other places as well as here. I guess being injured a couple of times this season has me a little hesitant, but he's been the guy that's been able to overcome the injuries. Does his level drop with those injuries? Yes. But, you know, considering it's a lower leg injury, it's not very difficult to see why he struggled. But I would love to get Travis Jones in here. I'd love Adafi Owe back because you need a pass rusher in this business. If he shows what he's shown now, maybe not to this level, but if there's a dip in production, but still steady with getting to the quarterback, I would love to have him back. Isaiah Likely, maybe a luxury, but bringing him in, and then you maybe have a conversation about Mark Andrews.
Yep.
I think that will be something to look forward to. I don't think you can bring Daniel Fa'alele back. I think he's just a guy that maybe on the outside looking in. Who else? Who's Linderbaum. The other guy? Who? Linderbaum? Oh, you got to bring Linderbaum back. Oh my goodness. That should have been the first one I mentioned.
This is a lot of names. And the problem is all these guys would be early signees, and you're not trying to, Linderbaum, you really need to avoid letting him get to the fifth year option point because you can't afford it. Because he's lumped in with left tackle money and whatnot. So you got to sign him this year. Whereas Hamilton, they can afford to wait because the safety dollars for a 50-year contract, same draft, are much lower. And they can then still sign him before his fifth year instead of before his fourth year for Linderbaum when they're sort of forced to. But I want to go back to Travis Jones for a second, because I think basically Travis Jones is the kind of player, and hopefully you keep Pierce around too for next year, he is signed, that you have a player who makes all outside pass rushers better and would actually fuel the Ravens' ability to sign cheap veteran pass rushers. I think players like Clowney, Van Noy, and others they've had recently, Jason Pierre-Paul, you want to go to a little further down the list, Justin Houston, are guys who have really benefited from the Ravens' interior defensive line strength. And He basically, his contract isn't for his own pass rush. It's for how he drives the rest of the pass rush around him. And I really hope they can do it. I really hope they can find a way to get the money. But he'll command a lot of money come 2026 if he does not sign.
Yeah, and we know that you've been a big Travis Jones fan since the beginning. So you're not one of these guys that have come in and, you know, all of a sudden are in the bandwagon. You've been high on him since the beginning. So I hope for your sake and for Ravens fans' sake, they definitely keep him. And to your point, you're absolutely right. Having interior pressure definitely alleviates both the need to have a premier pass rusher on the outside and the expense that goes with it. So I think Travis Jones is a multi-dimensional need for bringing him in for the long term. So hopefully they get it done. I would be very happy if they do so.
Yeah, me too. I'll move on. I'll talk about bring up Kyle Van Noy. I was interested to see this because I write up my piece and I've got all the time references and the plays and whatnot. And I'm trying to judge who really I think played well. And then just about the time I release it, PFF also releases their grades. And I noticed that they had Van Noy rated as not particularly well this week. And for starters, I had him for contributions to 8 pressure events. Now, part of this is in a difference of how we define the cone. And there's very strong evidence given in terms of how the quarterback reacts to the cone being impinged or imperiled, that he won't step into his throw in the usual way. He'll kind of half step into it. Anytime you get the quarterback even to do that, you're accomplishing something as a pass rusher. And Van Noy had 6 full pressures, 1 a half pressure, and a quarterback hit. The quarterback hit was a late one. It was kind of a cleanup job off an ample time and space opportunity. Still good. Always good when you knock the quarterback down. I thought he had a really good game from a pass rush perspective. Not just an okay game, a really good game. And then from a rush perspective, I thought he kind of let the team down a little bit. He was one of the guys who didn't completely stay in his spot. He was a part of a 13-yard run, another screen pass that went awry. So there were some problems there, but as purely as a pass rusher, I thought this was an excellent game for Van Noy.
Yeah, and that was my thought process too when I looked at his stats, that he did have a great game as a pass rusher. I think I'm not 100% sure, and I'm still trying to figure out. There was a couple of guys who disappeared in this game. What the reason for it was, I don't know if it was by design or if it was just, you know, him not feeling so well. I'm not 100% sure. I think Kyle Van Noy was on the injury report for a couple of weeks, so that
illness.
That's what it was. Okay, so that may play a part in his. In his struggles in a certain situation, but I think you're exacerbating yourself the most when you're rushing the passer. So it may have been one of those things where you're just saving yourself for those critical moments, but yeah, he wasn't all that impressive in those regards, but still for a guy to come in off the street basically and comes in and he continues to be a guy that can make plays for this defense, I'm not going to get too upset with his performance one way or another, especially on the opposite end of his play as far as things outside of pass rush. So I get it. He didn't play that great of a game, and then PFF pretty much notates that. But I think as a pass rusher, he was still effective, which is good in my book.
All right.
Let me see. Who would I want to talk about next? You know who I want to talk about? And I think fans would kind of enjoy this a little bit. Marlon Humphrey. And mm-hmm. I think Marlon Humphrey is a guy who's been maligned a little bit by the fan base. And, I don't want to get too off topic with the technicality, but, you know, having a podcast, being the guy that, you know, isn't, you know, in their sense, doing enough to prepare for the game, he has been exceptional as a.
Didn't you know it's possible to get THC shipped right to your door? Mood delivers premium 100% federally legal THC directly to you. I'm talking about delicious high potency gummies, top shelf flower, home-baked cookies, vapes, anything you'd find at a dispensary, you can now order online and have it shipped quickly, discreetly, and conveniently right to your door. And every Mood product is made from pesticide-free cannabis grown on America's best small farms at prices that won't destroy your wallet. Best of all, not only is every Mood product backed by a 100-day satisfaction guarantee, but as I mentioned, listeners get 20% off their first order with code RAVENS. So head to mood.com/ravens, check out their online dispensary, and let Mood help you discover your perfect mood. And don't forget to use promo code RAVENS when you check out to save 20% on your first order.
Access big savings every day, all in the Kroger app.
Get tender Heritage Farm boneless chicken breast for $2.49 a pound. Then find low prices on thousands of items like sparkling ice water, Kroger brand chips, and more, all with your card.
Shop these deals at your local Kroger today, or tap the screen now to download the Kroger app to save big today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Prices and product availability subject to change. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
At Kroger, an annual Boost membership just got even better. Now you can choose from Disney Plus with ads, Hulu with ads, or ESPN Plus on us when you sign up. Plus, enjoy unlimited free delivery, double fuel points, exclusive offers, and free items. Sign up for a Boost membership today. It's an easier way to save, including new streaming options to relax with while we deliver your groceries. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
Defender, probably maybe even more so than Kyle Hamilton, in my opinion, just being that guy that's been consistent, that huge interception, terrible throw by Russell Wilson, by the way, but still to have that turnover that pretty much gave the Ravens a chance. He's played exceptional. He's been the heartbeat of this team. Offenses are still not throwing at him. I'm not sure if you have the targeting numbers yourself, but
yeah,
they're really staying away from this guy, and why not? I mean, this guy is still, in my opinion, playing at a Pro Bowl level. I think he leads the league in interceptions for cornerbacks. So he has played very well. I'm very happy with his performance, especially given kind of the negativity he's got from the fans. But he's going to be a big part of this defense moving forward, especially considering, as we mentioned, Kyle Hamilton's moving back to the back end permanently for most of the time. Him being that guy in the middle of the defense will pay huge dividends, and I think he deserves his kudos.
He's got a 14% target rate this year, which is higher than either of Stevens, but it's pretty close in all the cases. Part of that is probably because he's playing a fair amount of slot corner. He may get a higher target rate there, so it's not the same as judging him against an outside corner. So I think there may be an apples and oranges component of this, but yeah. Hey, he's been great when he has been targeted. When he has been targeted, he's given up 313 yards on 54 targets, which is under 6 per target. That's just outstanding for a corner. The passer rating throwing against him for the year is 55.6. In this last game, it was 2.8, by the way.
Wow.
So one interception, no touch. He allowed 3 targets against him for 4 total yards. So he's made contributions in every part of the game, made contributions as a pass rusher. Again, in this game, he had a pressure where he chased Wilson right, then Wilson threw the ball to Harris. Our Darius Washington missed the tackle, and then Humphrey came in and cleaned up. And so he had pressure, and then he cleaned up on a missed tackle after. Just amazing play. It's kind of like, reminds me in some ways of the, not quite as great as this play, but the Hamilton play where he accepted a chop block, had a lineman fully on top of him. Lineman gets off him, he gets up, and he still makes an interception on the play.
49ers game.
Yeah,
I remember very
game.
Well.
Yeah. Yep. Yeah, so great game for Humphrey. Contributions against the run as well. He did everything. If we had MVPs in this game, he has certainly been the defensive MVP for me.
Yeah, he's been phenomenal.
I got one other play that I know we want to talk about. That's Tre'Davious White. He wasn't in there for a whole lot of plays, 24 snaps. So just to get the evolution of the game, we did talk about this a little bit in the first part, but I'll go over it again very quickly. He played initially only in the dime packages. Now, we talked about how very impressive the Ravens were with their dime package getting stopped. 7 drive-ending plays out of 8 dime snaps, and White was in there for those. He had 3 of his stops, 2 of which came in dime packages, coming a 3rd and 20 and a 3rd and 5. The 3rd and 20, he kept a PL8 in front of him, so a pass left for 8 yards. He didn't even make the tackle, but he kept the receiver in front of him, and I think it was Washington. Yeah, Washington made the tackle. Then he had a 3rd and 5 play in the end zone where he knocked down the pass at the catch point with Pickens. And that was more of a contested catch point, not where they were physical with each other. And then, of course, late in the game, they got real physical with each other. And I think Charles Davis really called it correctly, that that's a place where they're not going to call the flag if Pickens has his hands on White as he did. If Pickens had put his hands up and, you know, played the I'm getting interfered with game, then maybe they'd have given him the flag. But then also maybe it had been interception. he couldn't really afford to do that. White was in position. And unfortunately, he didn't come down with that. Only 2 completions for 15 yards on his 4 targets in total. The ball skills immediately apparent again. I think White is going to get some significant playing time at right corner in the coming weeks. I don't know if it's going to be a complete transition. It may be a rotation. That's often the way that Harbaugh rolls with this. Stevens happy, rotate back and forth, maybe also have Stevens play some safety in practice. And if you need him there, you move him there. And then the situation kind of resolves itself.
Yeah, you hit the nail right on the head with that one. I think they'll transition White slowly. I'd be very surprised if it's a full transition, just because, as you mentioned in the last episode, White told us that he's not 100% comfortable with all the complexities of the defense yet. So I'm not sure if you want to have a guy like that out there full time for 70 plus snaps a game. But he has earned that playing time. He's earned the trust of that defense. So I think we'll slowly see him acclimate to this defense. I think there's a chance that he'll have more playing time in the upcoming game against the Chargers. I think that will be a better litmus test, in my opinion. There are things that George Pickens does that there's no one on the Chargers roster that has that skill set. So it was nice to see him be able to lock him up with those three critical pass breakups. But it'll be nice to see him moving forward to see if this is just a one shot in the dark, or if this is a consistent thing. And if he's able to play anywhere close to the way he played in this game for a full season, the Ravens are in a very good place entering January. So I'm very impressed with White. Again, as I mentioned in the last episode, I was kind of hopeful, optimistic about his level of play, but I could not have guessed that he came in immediately and had this type of success. So definitely good to see if you're a Ravens fan, and be interesting to see how the Ravens use Stevens moving forward.
Let me ask you with one more question on White. He had a receiver like Pickens to work against for a lot of his coverage snaps in this game. Not all, but a lot of them. Does he stylistically, do you think at this point in his career, match up better against a Pickens because he's more able to contest the catch point? His speed does not put him at a disadvantage against a player like Pickens as much as it would be against a faster receiver if a Flowers or even a Bateman was matched up with him. What's the ideal coverage matchup at this point in his career for Tre'Davious White?
You are 100% spot on. That's exactly what he'll be used for. It's very difficult to play these speedy receivers. Even Marlon Humphrey sometimes struggles against him. I think they'll be better served with these big body receiver types to have him on it. Somebody that can contest, as you mentioned, at the catch radius point. I don't know if the offenses will get a hold of that and kind of position them in that regard. And I want to get your thoughts on how the Ravens choose to play their corners. I think for the most part, the Ravens have their guy on one side and they don't really deviate or follow the opposing receiver. So that's something that opposing offense could take advantage of. But to your point again, I think he's well equipped to handle those big receivers. They're not too speedy, too agile, that are going to try and go up and get him. And that's something that the Ravens really haven't had as far as defense on the outside. We have Marlon Humphrey on the inside able to do that, but to have our defender on the outside who's able to consistently defend those guys is something that the Ravens, I'm sure, are very happy to have now.
That's you make a great point there about the fixed sides for the corners. It's something that's kind of frustrated me. There are lots of reasons to do it. If you've got corners who like to find the ball over one shoulder, then that's something that you might realistically stay with, and there are reasons to do it. I don't know that White is limited to one side or the other. I honestly don't know his career history, whether he's been largely LCB or RCB. Do you happen to know, by the way?
I don't know, but I know he's an outside corner, but that's pretty much the gist of it for me. But that's actually an interesting point.
Yeah, so he might have been either, but I think the Ravens have a new opportunity to change the rules right now and say, hey, we want Wiggins on the opposing number one receiver. And I think that's the matchup the Ravens would do best with, because the usual rule of putting one corner on an island is you put your best corner on the number two receiver, because you can leave them on an island there and you usually are fine. If you put your second best corner, but maybe your most physically gifted and fastest corner, you put on your number one receiver and then you give him help. And with that, you can usually cover that number one guy. But with White, it'll be interesting, because I think he really is a matchup guy and they might want to move him around a little bit. In this game, he only played right corner. He didn't play any slot or anything like that. I've got to think about that, if that's true. See, he might have played slot in some 2x2 formations here. I kind of forget where he lined up in the dime, whether he was on the outside or the inside. But Stevens was definitely at the end of the game. Stevens was lining up at the inside in these dime formations.
Yes,
but I'm not sure how they were matched up earlier than that. So I'll hold my tongue a little bit on that one.
I still think that moving forward, they will be better served that way. But to your, I think, maybe, again, this is just based on the small sample size we got. He might have that agility. We saw what he did in Buffalo. I think he was better equipped to handle those smaller, faster receivers. But I think they're okay with just having him be on that big body. And as you mentioned, having Nate Wiggins on the number one receiver, I think they will work better that way. Whether or not they choose to do it remains to be seen. I haven't seen much evidence to see that prior to this game, but here's hoping. I think the Ravens are better served if they're a little more versatile. Having Kyle Hamilton play in the back end definitely shortens the amount of complexity they can have on defense, I think, to a certain extent. So being able to be versatile with where you move your corners may play dividends in the long run.
Okay. Okay. Other players you'd like to talk about? Do you have somebody else?
Let's see. There is one player, and I think that I touched on a little bit ago, Adisa Isaac. I think that there's a chance that this is something that we may be talking about more so. I mean, the David Ojabo experiment may be coming to an end, which is unfortunate because that tandem with Odafe Owe was always enticing considering they both came from the same college. But I don't know, this Adisa Isaac thing. I don't really have the stats. I'm not sure he wasn't too impressive in his limited role, but I think that they see the potential with him and they're going to have to take a shot. You know, you drafted him for a reason and you're not getting what you wanted out of the job. So I'm very interested to see moving forward how they do. There is a specific set of guys that are inactive every game, but they're starting to flip flop who they decide to bring in and give a chance. So I'll be interested to see if this is the setup moving forward, if they try Jabo again in the weeks ahead.
Right. So sometimes you're very limited in terms of who you can use. And yeah. And part of it is a limitation to special teams and part of it's a limitation due to injuries. So if you have a number of walking wounded on your roster, so for instance, Mollett is on the roster. He hasn't gone to IR yet, but they can't activate him because he's not ready to play. He's in a boot right now. And it may be several weeks of that. And Rasheen Ali might be – actually, he's back practicing full now, so he's a bad example. And the Ravens are largely healthy coming out of this week. So they're in a fortunate position of not having a lot of walking wounded. I think it was about week two of 2023. The Ravens walking wounded were littered all over the roster. They barely could dress 53 guys. And one game, they dressed a ninth offensive lineman. It was Salah for yes. a game when they had – I mean, there's just no use for this guy. I mean, you get an eighth offensive lineman free, so they took that. But then, because the roster increases by one if you have eight offensive linemen, but there's no point in having a ninth offensive lineman. But that's all the Ravens had on their roster was that additional player. So I guess they figured may as well have the extra security blanket for for what might happen.
Right.
I forget where we were. Oh yeah, but in terms of the Ojabo and Isaac situation, I think it's good to get a look at Isaac, first of all, because you want to see where he is on the developmental path. But more importantly, if they had an option to really develop one of these players right now, the obvious choice that is better for the Ravens is Isaac. Isaac is a first-year player. The Ravens own his future for the next 3 years. You know, they still are highly incented. By the way, is it incented or incentivized? There's these grammar nerds out there. If you're a grammar nerd... Hit me up. I want to know if it's incented or incentivized because I looked it up once and I thought I saw that it was incentivized and I always learned the word as incented growing up in a profession that uses that word a lot. So anyway, the Ravens are highly incentivized to wanting to see what Isaac can do this year as opposed to later.
And that makes sense. You know, a job all you pretty much know what you have. There's a chance for a spark, but you know, you got to get your guys going. And I know this is a defensive portion of the show, but there's other guys like Tez Walker, Rasheen Ali, who the Ravens haven't seen yet. And you know, they want to get them on the field to get them acclimated to NFL speed because, and I mentioned this early in the season, it is a struggle for an offensive or a player in general come from college to make that transition to the pros. They're leaning so heavily on the athleticism instead of the nuances of the game, the technique that is required to be successful. It's a lot. A playbook, it's a bunch of stuff. So to get those guys on the field and have them get snaps is very important. So very interested to see, very happy to see them take this approach with Isaac, and let's see what they do as the weeks progress.
You know, a great point there. And if you look at the running back situation as an example, I know we're talking defense here, but Rasheen Ali can't get on the active roster, but they've hardly gotten any total snaps from RB3 the entire year. In this game, Keaton Mitchell didn't have any. Nope. So if they can't get him on the field, I think that's right. He didn't have a single snap, I believe. Definitely didn't have a carry. But in any case, now Keaton Mitchell did have two snaps at running back, according to this. Okay, but even so, it's still the point is still, I think, secure here. It's not going to help to get Ali on the team if he's only going to get two snaps in a game or three snaps in a game. He'll play some special teams. But right now, the Ravens, his roster spot is the most in jeopardy of anybody. He's the next one to go if they have to go to the street to get a defensive lineman, if they feel like they have to go to the street to get a free safety. Ali is the guy who will be put on IR and shell for the season. So I kind of hope that they determine that Keaton Mitchell is really ready to go before that happens. There just comes a point where you have to do it, and you can still reverse it because you have a even if he's going hurt, they can bring him back in 4 weeks.
Yeah.
All right. How about we do some mailbag questions here to close it out? And I know we've got a few in there, and I know some of them were related to the safety situation, but here we go. Okay. Here's an interesting one. Do you have any tips for how to identify holding when watching a game live on TV? Unclear what actually constitutes a hold and when calls are valid, unfair, or missed. Can answer an offensive episode, or it may be worth its own short. Okay. Good question. I just looked at it here without doing it, but how about for you? How do you identify a hold when you're watching one on TV?
Are you talking about defensive holding or offensive holding?
I think they're talking about offensive holding, but we could call it that way for defensive holding too. That might be more appropriate to the show, but offensive holding is I think what he's talking about.
Okay. Well, for defensive holding, it's anything after 5 yards. If I see them, you know, holding onto the guy too long after that 5 yard mark, then I'm assuming that they're going to call holding 9 times out of 10. On the offensive side of the ball, it's whenever their hands aren't within the numbers, within the shoulder pads for me. So if they're holding the arms or if the player's having difficulty moving one way or another with their body, then that's my indication of holding. It's pretty much for the referee, it's holding on every play. I think we say this all the time, but it is very much so. In my opinion, you shouldn't call holding on a play that doesn't necessarily affect the play. So if you see holding on the right side and the guy's running left, just let it go, unless it's egregious, in my opinion. But other than that, I think for me, when I see holding, it's that when you're impeding the movement of the defender by holding them outside of the front plate of their jersey.
Right. So key for me is watch for where the hands are. It's very natural for big offensive linemen, in particular when they're blocking a linebacker in level two or do other things. And Daniel Faalele does this all the time, and it kind of drives me nuts in a way, is their wingspan is too great for them to easily put their hands on the chest plate of the player, where they have broad discretion to do what they want to do in terms of grabbing jerseys. It's not limited in the way that people think it is for, say, receivers who are very much impeded by any sort of jersey grab. Usually jersey grab that's apparent is immediate flag in the secondary, even within 5 yards. It'll be an immediate flag. A jersey grab on the offensive line is perfectly normal. And in fact, we had Ben Powers on the show. He said his preferred method of blocking was to use his right hand for power and his left hand for control. And his left hand, he would immediately go to the V-neck of the jersey. And so be grabbing down on the guy like this while he's trying to, you know, use his right hand for power there. Great, great idea. If you can get away with it, it's great work. And he did. I mean, his whole final season with the Ravens, when I had this discussion with him, he'd only been penalized one time the whole game. And it was a pretty ticky-tack call when it happened. It was into level two. That's the primary thing is keep your hands inside the frame. When the ball goes by you, there's a natural impact that if your hand is on the guy's outside shoulder, that the holding is going to become apparent to the referee. So you have to know when to quit on the block. Let it go. It's much better. Those post-snap fouls are very costly because they not only can cost you 10 yards, which is really bad, they can also cost you the play and be declined if it's worse. If there's a fumble, if there's a turnover, if they lose 5 yards on the play anyway, they may decide that's better. If you get a few yards, but it doesn't give you the first down on third down, that is such a serious and misunderstood component of penalties, that optionality to decline, that you really don't want to put your team in that position.
Yeah, that's very true. I can't stand it during the big play when it gets called back. Oh my goodness. And
we
could talk about it all day about the legal man downfield. I know this is a defensive portion, but man, those penalties can kill you. And holding especially, because it does move you 10 bars back and does give the opposing team that option to decide which way do you want to die, by 1,000 cuts or the 10 yards back motion. So yeah, holding stuff.
By the way, that question came from @KedmaWeather. Really appreciate it. KMFFL Podcast Network. Next question comes from A-Bits, longtime listener of the show, comes up with questions almost every week, but he's got a good one here. With Hamilton taking over the free safety role, Roquan looked much more effective. How much would you attribute that to the improved safety play, and what, if any, scheme changes were made to help Smith out? I didn't see him in the A-gap this week, which is a change. By the way, he's right about that, because the Ravens had very few even individual simulated pressure, and Smith, in fact, dropped the cover only two times. Oh, wait a minute. That's for two sheets, my third sheet of the game. Yep. Still only two times the entire game did he drop from the A-gap to cover. So great point, and obviously very good observation there, A-Bits. What do you think about that? I mean, should it follow naturally that having a free safety you can trust is going to make for easier zone handoffs, and having Hamilton or Darius back there was better for Roquan?
I think so. I think there is something to that. I'm not sure if that will continue throughout the rest of the season, but it does make sense that having some help back there, being very confident in who you have in the back end, will leave you more comfortable to have Roquan in those situations where he doesn't really have to do those simulated pushbacks to get into coverage. So I think that there's have something to do with it. Do I think it lasts throughout the rest of the season? I'm not sure, but that's a very good observation. Roquan did look way better in this contest than in previous weeks. And I think that could have some correlation with the move to Kyle Hamilton at free safety.
Yeah, a lot in run defense for Roquan, but I thought he also had a good game in pass coverage where he didn't allow any big plays. And obviously, big plays are what you really want to avoid as an inside linebacker. Those plays between level two and three where you had a real chance to impact it and weren't either dragging your receiver properly or released too early for your safeties to have an impact on the play. But I've always felt, by the way, that PFF is very harsh in terms of their grading of who they give a target to between a linebacker and a safety. They're much, much harsher on linebackers. They give them a higher percentage of those targets. And a lot of times linebackers just can't follow a route as deeply as they would need to be effective. And that space between two and three ends up being a big transfer of targets from safeties to inside linebackers in their system.
That's a very good point. Yeah, I've noticed that too. That could be, I don't want to say political, but it could be political because, you know, having coverage grades higher for safeties is a lot more important than the linebackers. But yeah, I think you're right. There is something to that. I wonder why that is. Maybe because it's the second level and they're expecting more from the linebackers, but that is a good point. I do see them be a lot harsher for those linebackers.
All right. Let's see if we've got one more here that we haven't really answered in the rest of the show. This one is from Brad McGowan. Brad, always appreciate it. Hamilton is 6 and Washington is 8 in PFF coverage grade for safeties. Oh, really? I didn't know that. I think Williams is last. Do you really think Williams is washed, or is he rebelling against the system or something? Makes no sense. He's just so broken now.
Ah, man, that's a good point. And I think, yes, Washington's very good at safety. Definitely. I don't know how the Ravens do it. They always get these guys, Geno Stone, you know, Chuck Clark, you know, now Darius Washington to come in and just fit right in like a glove. And we all know Kyle Hamilton's acumen as a player that doesn't need any discussion. But yeah, we talked about it. I'm not sure what happened with Marcus Williams. It's one of the stories that's going to kill me, because I've watched every snap of his this season just to get an idea of what's going on. It's just the lapses in judgment as well as the lack of speed at times. When he had one arm last year, he was looking like a phenomenal safety. And for whatever reason, the drop-off is there. So I don't think he's rebelling against the system. I think he's trying his best to make a play, and it's costing his team. And I think sometimes he just really doesn't know what the play call is. At least that's what it looks like on film. So it's tough for Marcus, and I hope that he gets it together. Who knows? I mean, it's still a lot of games left to be played. He may get another chance at it.
Yeah.
Obviously, fans are going to think some type of way because he didn't. He only had one snap in this game, and the pass defense played so well. But he still has a chance to turn things around. And I think he still has the ability to be that safety. Again, as we mentioned in the last episode, I would be awfully upset if he goes to another squad and plays the way he has in the past. He still has that in him, I think. Can the Ravens bring it out? Who knows? But they're running out of time. They have to make this decision, and I think they're better for it with Audarius and Kyle back there.
They may well have to go back to Williams with injury. And one of the things I like about how they've handled the situation is, unlike the Eddie Jackson situation, where I think they basically burned the bridge with him. I think that with Williams, there's still a chance they could get him to get back in there on the back end and be the safety they needed if there is an injury. And it's always a possibility with these players. So you really don't know. Mm-hmm. All right, let me see. We got anything else we've got that. This question from Brad. Brad, thanks again for putting that one. Okay, here's one from Be More Sky High. I know he had two good ones in here. Okay. Hamilton playing free safety, we're essentially giving us a lot of plays, +3, -3 yards from... Okay. I think he's saying when Hamilton was playing closer to the line of scrimmage, he was essentially giving... Oh, he gave up a lot of plays, +3 yards from the line of scrimmage. Now I understand the question. Okay. Almost forcing death by 1,000 cuts. Given Hamilton is likely to get better at playing free safety and making plays from that spot, do you think it's worth the sacrifice? I'll answer this one first, and I'd love to hear what you have to say about it. I think they're kind of forced into this sacrifice right now. I don't think they have another choice. And I've been saying that for a long time with Williams, is there just isn't anybody else on the team who could play that free safety spot. Now Hamilton's done it. They give up something to do it, but it's kind of a little, it's nice that Marlon Humphrey is the guy who ends up playing more nickel in this, and him being a big physical guy, at least it gives you some of what you had with Hamilton.
Yeah. And I agree with you completely. You had to make the move at this point. You were trying to be the defense you were last year by keeping Hamilton there and being versatile and giving the opposing offense something more to think about. But at this point, you lean on your offense. You don't make yourself the reason for the loss. And as he mentioned, Kyle Hamilton is only going to get better as he gets comfortable in that position. He has the skill set already to be successful. He's just more dangerous as a guy near the line of scrimmage. But that doesn't mean he doesn't have the talent to be effective at that end. There's a reason why safeties aren't really, considered a premier position, because you're not near the ball nearly as much. But that doesn't mean that Kyle Hamilton won't have success. These teams are going to still try and attack this pass defense because the run defense is that good. So Kyle will still have an opportunity to be that guy. I think Kyle will definitely have a chance to be the guy you need to be in on the field. And we'll see what happens with this defense. But I think for sure, there's no way you come into this game without making that switch. I'm glad they made it. They had 10 days to figure it out. And I think moving forward, this is going to be the way to go. As you mentioned, Marlon Humphrey can still be that guy in the physical corner in the middle of that defense and still cause some problems, but obviously they'll be a lot better with Kyle Hamilton there and a fully expressively great safety in Marcus Williams. That's not going to be the case. At least it doesn't appear to be the case now. So let's hope that this defense does what they have to do to shore things up as the season ends. But I know this isn't a defensive portion, but if this offense can continue to play the way they have in the past opposite this game, they're set with Kyle Hamilton back there.
Yeah. They'll be fine indeed. And even if you believe other offenses are more competent, and I'm certain that's true, that the Steelers are somewhat limited, they're still not terrible, and they played well recently, and the Ravens really turned it around on them and put out a really good defensive effort.
Yep.
Got one more question here. It's from Brett Hammonds. He says, how many years of team control does Ardarius Washington have left? And is now the time for a divisible benefits extension? Okay. So he's in his third year right now, and Ardarius is a weird case where he played 4 years ago, but he lost a year of his tenure to not being active. It might have been on the practice squad. He wasn't on the roster anyway, so he lost his year of eligibility tenure from that. So he's still one year short of being a free agent. So this would be the time to sign him after this year. To some sort of a cheap deal. And by the way, he's also the kind of player those deals usually are most attractive to. It's a guy who normally doesn't necessarily fit everybody's scheme, isn't necessarily a big value player across the league, but he might become that. And, if you sign him for 3 years, $12 million or something after this year, that might be a win for both teams. It'd probably be an extension, by the way. He'd probably play his fourth year at the current rate and then sign for three extra at $12 million. And you potentially could get a good amount of divisible benefits for both player and team. The player gets limited risk, and the team gets good value on the contract.
Yeah, I think this is one of the moves that the Ravens always seem to make. I think they'll be wise to make it, and I would be surprised if they don't do it in the offseason. I think, you know, given the fact that we had two safeties now, we've given a pretty good chunk of change to having a guy that, you know, is stable and can be that safety. I always equate, especially now with the level of play, safety play, I equate safety play to, are you making the mistake? You don't, obviously you're not going to have success one-on-one coverage against those speedy wide receivers, but in zone coverage where you have to be the last line of defense, are you making the critical error or are you making the play? More often than not, Ardarius is making that play. And I think the Ravens will reward him with a good contract. And I think that's pretty much the MO of this team for the last 30 years. So.
Yeah, they've definitely been extremely good at finding safeties, particularly dime backs during the Ozzie era, and always finding them sixth round and later, cheap UDFAs, UDFAs and cheap players. Ardarius was a UDFA, right? Yeah, he's a UDFA. Yeah. He's not even a drafted player. So another good one for the Ravens over the time. That's going to have to do it for this. I'm sorry. We had some mailbag questions we didn't get to. Lots of great stuff out there. But Sam, really appreciate you coming on the show. Absolute pleasure to talk football for you. I appreciate you setting aside 2 hours. I've really enjoyed this conversation. I want to make sure we get you on again soon.
Oh, man, I'll appreciate it. I think, I don't know if I told you this, but 95% of the reason why I got in this game is because I listen to your show and I love your stuff. And definitely having a guy who's, you know, articulate and very unbiased in their messaging with the Ravens and how they play on a week-to-week basis is definitely invaluable for the fan base. So definitely a pleasure to have myself on, and I appreciate you having me on. Definitely got to do it again.
All right, Sam, very much appreciate you. He is at Ravens Talk. Ravensock Pod, or what is it?
Ravensock Podcast on YouTube and Instagram, and Ravensock Pod on Twitter X.
Okay. All right. Very good. Make sure you follow Sam. Make sure you tag him into some conversations. Get his thoughts out, because he has a lot of good things to say, as you heard in the last couple hours here. Hope you also go back and listen to part one. If you're still on with us, that means you're one of the really big fans of the show that are extremely loyal. So this is the time I make a pitch. Show the show to somebody else who hasn't seen it, maybe. There's somebody out there, you know, who might be a Ravens fan. If you meet him walking around the neighborhood, walking your dog, and you get to talking about the Ravens, say, you know, one thing you should do is listen to the Film Study Baltimore Ravens Talk. Do that. And we'd really appreciate it. Otherwise, 50 word review is always nice. 5 stars. Always appreciate that. And thanks again for your loyalty in terms of listening. Sam, thank you for coming on.
Oh, huge pleasure. Thank you for having me.
And we'll talk to you next time on Film Study.
Ladies and gentlemen, we are now boarding Group A. Please have your boarding passes ready to scan. If your phone is cracked, old, or was chewed up by your Chihuahua travel companion, please refrain from holding up the line. And instead, simply go to Verizon and trade in any phone in any condition from one of their top brands for the new Samsung Galaxy S25 Plus with Galaxy AI on Unlimited Ultimate and Watch or Tap, also on them.
Service plan required for Watch or Tap. Trade-in and additional terms apply. See Verizon.com for details.
Access big savings every day, all in the Kroger app.
Get tender Heritage Farm boneless chicken breast for $2.49 a pound. Then find low prices on thousands of items like sparkling ice water, Kroger brand chips, and more, all with your card.
Shop these deals at your local Kroger today, or tap the screen now to download the Kroger app to save big today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Prices and product availability subject to change. Restrictions apply. See site for details.